We've not created, as I said before, we've not created very many jobs, less than a quarter of what we had created under President Biden. Anybody with friends trying to get jobs knows what a difficult labor market today's labor market is.
I want to go back to President Trump speaking last night.
Now, the same people in this chamber who voted for those disasters suddenly used the word affordability, a word they just used it. Somebody gave it to them, knowing full well that they caused and created the increased prices that all of our citizens had to endure. You caused that problem. You caused that problem.
Affordability, Professor Stiglitz. We're speaking to you here in New York. Of course, the new mayor, Zoran Mamdani, is sent the message to people all over the country, especially those who are considering elected office, or to diehard politicians, senators, congress members, that affordability was the word, was the issue people are most concerned about. What about President Trump mocking it?
Well, I think he's mocking the American people when he mocks the issue of affordability. The reason people worry about affordability is things are not affordable. And the other way of putting it is that their real incomes adjusted for inflation are down. Now, one of the striking things about what President Trump has done, he talked about this tax cut, the biggest tax cut in history. He was wrong about that. As a percentage of GDP, it doesn't even rank near the top. But where it does rank at the top is that it was the most regressive tax cut. That is to say, the benefits went to the millionaires, the billionaires, the corporations, and those at the bottom paid the price. They paid the price with almost a $1 trillion cut in Medicaid. And that was why the Democrats had insisted on the government shutdown. They said, you can't do that. That's just not right that you would be giving a tax cut for billionaires and asking the poorest Americans not to have adequate health care in a country where health care is being so bad that life expectancy, even before the pandemic, was on the down.
Your final comments, Professor Stiglitz, coming off of what's considered one of the longest State of the Unions and assessment of this country in modern history.
Well, you know, long speeches like that reminds me of Castro and other demagogues who just love, they get the platform, they just talk and talk and talk. But I think the striking thing is that in spite of the tariffs that were supposed to bring back manufacturing jobs are actually down, and in spite of the tariffs that were supposed to eliminate the huge trade deficit in goods, the trade deficit in goods is actually up. So his policies have failed, even in the areas where he said, in the objectives that he set forth. So, yes, his speech was filled with misleading statements, with lies. We've come to expect that. But in the core aspect of his agenda, the numbers show that he has dramatically failed to do what he promised.
Joseph Stiglitz, Nobel Prize-winning economist, Columbia University professor, former chair of the Council of Economic Advisors. Professor Stiglitz is also currently the chief economist at the Roosevelt Institute. His new book, just out in paperback this week, The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. On Tuesday night, Congresswoman Summer Lee of Pennsylvania gave the Working Families Party response to Trump's State of the Union.
So let's start with a simple truth. What we are witnessing from our government is authoritarianism. Any response that doesn't acknowledge that truth is a disservice to Americans who deserve and need honesty right now. I listened to Donald Trump's speech tonight. While Trump and his friends profit off his presidency, he's gaslighting us. He wants to convince working families that we're better off under his regime. But we know the truth. Our country is in crisis. For millions of Americans, affordability is out of reach. Trump has driven up the unemployment rate, cutting thousands of federal jobs across the country. Everything he does is making Americans less safe at home and abroad. He's bringing us to the brink of wars in the Middle East and South America. And at home, ICE agents are hunting down human beings and cities are under siege. The FBI is raiding election offices in Georgia. Students are being disappeared for protesting tyranny and genocide in Palestine. The environmental protections we earned after a generation of advocacy are being stripped away.
That was Pennsylvania Congresswoman Summer Lee giving the Working Families Party response to the State of the Union. Joining us now from Capitol Hill, Congressmember Lee, if you can carry on from what you were saying last night, you did not attend the State of the Union. Tell us why as well.
Because the president's disgraceful, and I don't think it's worth our time to give him an audience. That's what he wants. He wants to be able to tell us to our face lies and gaslight us to our face. And the reality is that we have better things to do with our time. And I think that there are people who deserve our attention far more than he does.
So talk about the people's State of the Union. The people's State of the Union on the Mall last night with many Congress members like you, as well as senators speaking out.
I think it was an opportunity for us to get in front of the people who are harmed most by Trump's and Republicans' policies. Right now, people in this country, they really want an end to the status quo. They don't care about the pomp and circumstance and the decorum of this institution. They're wondering why we're not disrupting or doing things differently, or at least not giving any more credibility to this administration. So the people's State of the Union, I was grateful for, because it was an attempt for us and an opportunity for us to walk away from him, to walk or turn our backs on a president that is insistent on lying to us, and just talking straight to the people about a truth that they were just not going to get last night. And that started obviously before the State of the Union, but there was no reason for any of us to believe that this would be the first night that he finally actually tells the American people the truth about the state, the truth about his policies, and the truth about what his intentions are for the country.
As you stand at the rotunda, I'm reminded that the House Speaker has said that Jesse Jackson's body cannot lay in honor in the Capitol, as John Lewis did, as Rosa Parks did. Can you talk about the significance of this and what Jesse Jackson meant to you?
Certainly. I don't find that shocking. This whole administration, this past year, has been about attacking Black folks, attacking our history, attacking the legacy that has been created out of movements like the Civil Rights Movement, like the Black Power Movement, and so many more. So for him to kind of try to insult the Reverend Jesse Jackson and his legacy at this last final resting point is not shocking. But the reality is that he could do no such thing, right? What Reverend Jesse Jackson has done and what he has meant to this country is not interrupted or is not changed by the fact that Donald Trump would not do right by him in this last moment. This is a man who, aside from and has impacted people in my district, in my life, me, myself, around his ministry, his activism, his politics, laying the groundwork for more progressive campaigning when there is a desperate need for an alternative message and for alternative ways of doing your politics. Jesse Jackson came and ran for president. He set the foundation for so many people after him, including me, to run on a progressive, unapologetically bold platform. So I'm grateful for the work that he's done, whether or not he is in the rotunda or not. We still honor the history. We still honor the work that he did. But more importantly, we recognize that right now more than ever, we have to carry on the work that what those civil rights activists, heroes, movement leaders did in 50 years ago is still happening right now, and that we have to re-up that battle. So right now, listen, don't focus as much on that. Focus on the attacks, not on his person, on attacks, not on his final, his final farewell. Focus on the attacks on his work.
Let's go back to President Trump criticizing Democrats last night for not supporting the SAVE Act, which voting rights advocates warn could disenfranchise millions.
And the reason they don't want to do it, why would anybody not want voter ID? One reason, because they want to cheat. There's only one reason. They make up all excuses. They say it's racist. They come up with things. You almost say, what imagination they have. They want to cheat. They have cheated. And their policy is so bad that the only way they can get elected is to cheat. And we're going to stop it. We have to stop it, John.
So that was President Trump last night. I'm looking at a piece in The Hill saying, in fact, instances of non-citizen voting are exceedingly rare. A 2016 general election study showed an estimated 30 incidents of suspected, not confirmed, non-citizen votes out of 23.5 million, which is 0.001% of the votes cast. Voter fraud generally also exceedingly rare. Numerous studies have found fraud rates that are just a fraction of 1%. Talking about Trump's claims of widespread fraud in the 2020 election rejected by 62 courts that reviewed the matter. If you could comment further, Congressmember Lee, on what President Trump is trying to do here by questioning the legitimacy of U.S. elections.
Oh, we all know what he's trying to do. When you take away the lie, and it's not just on this topic, when you take away the lie, there is no foundation for President Trump. There's no foundation for any of his cronies to stand on. They have to lie to people to get folks round up. They have to lie to get conservatives to participate or to at least not come to the side of where people are actually fighting for their interests. They don't want people to vote. They don't want people who won't vote for them to vote. So clarification, they don't want people who will vote for them to vote. So whether that's black folk or old or disabled people, they don't want you to vote because they want to continue on a system that has been rigged against you and in favor of them, of him and Elon Musk and his family and his friends and all of his friends who are on the Epstein files with him. That's who he has consistently protected. That's who they're protecting right now when they don't release the rest of the files. It is the same story over and over and over again. But we know the truth, right? As you said, the facts, the data, it speaks for itself. There is negligible amount of voter fraud. But instances of people, especially our elders, especially disabled folks, especially rural folks being able to access adequate ID is a real issue. So why in the country, right, as well run as we say ours is, why would we make it harder for people to vote? There is no other explanation.
I want to go back to President Trump speaking about Iran.
After Midnight Hammer, they were warned to make no future attempts to rebuild their weapons program, and in particular, nuclear weapons, yet they continue. They're starting it all over. We wiped it out, and they want to start all over again. And are at this moment again pursuing their sinister ambitions. We are in negotiations with them. They want to make a deal, but we haven't heard those secret words. We will never have a nuclear weapon.
A massive military, U.S. military presence has been moved near Iran. Congressmember Lee, your response to what President Trump is threatening?
Again, he started the speech off by saying that he alone ended six or so wars, while also using this opportunity to threat another country, to threat another endless war, to threat countless people who have been tied up in these endless wars that the United States continuously finds itself in. I think that President Trump has completely abandoned any form of diplomacy. He has completely abandoned any responsibility as this country is as powerful as us with our weapons, with our military, to be a positive force in the world. And it isn't just Iran. He's doing this in Gaza. He's done this in the Southern Hemisphere. He's done it with Denmark. It is chaotic. It dangers us. And again, like I said last night, everything he does makes us less safe. abroad and makes us less safe domestically. And it's important that we call that out in any attempt that every day we fight to get more people to understand how dangerous his presidency is and how dangerous his policies and his rhetoric are.
Summer Lee, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Democratic Congress member from Pennsylvania, the first black woman to represent Pennsylvania in Congress, gave the working family's response to President Trump's State of the Union. Coming up, we stay in Washington, D.C., where we speak with Alia Rahman, who was a guest at the State of the Union. She was removed from the gallery and arrested. Last month, video went viral of federal immigration officers in Minneapolis violently dragging her out of her car as she said, "I'm disabled." Stay with us.
Trump's federal thugs beat up on his face and his chest. Then we heard the gunshots. And Alex Pretty lay in the snow dead. Their claim was self-defense, sir. Just don't believe your eyes. It's our blood and bones and these whistles and phones against Miller and Noam's dirty lies. Oh, I'm Minneapolis, I hear your voice. Crimes through the bloody mist.
Streets of Minneapolis by Bruce Springsteen. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. As we continue to cover President Trump's State of the Union, we're joined now by Alia Rahman, who attended the speech as a guest of Minneapolis Congressmember Ilhan Omar. Last month, federal immigration officers in Minneapolis violently dragged Alia out of her car. She told agents she was disabled, that she had a brain injury, but they ignored her pleas for medical attention. She had been headed to a doctor's appointment when she was dragged out of her car. Video of the incident went viral. Last month, she testified at a hearing held by congressional Democrats in Capitol Hill.
I was carried face down through the street by my cuffed arms and legs while yelling that I had a brain injury and was disabled. I now cannot lift my arms normally. I was never asked for ID, never told I was under arrest, never read my rights, and never charged with a crime.
That was Alia Rahman testifying on Capitol Hill. Last night, she was removed from the gallery at the State of the Union, then arrested and jailed. She got out at like 4 o'clock this morning. Alia, welcome back to Democracy Now! Tell us what you went through last night and then what happened to you in Minneapolis.
Thanks for having me back, Amy. The reason I am wearing the same outfit I was at the State of the Union and in the media I did with Representative Omar, I was a guest of Representative Ilhan Omar's, is because I got out from a hospital visit and the custody of Capitol Police just before 4 a.m. And I had already been scheduled to talk to you, so I figured I would come and tell folks what happened. I was not just removed and arrested. I was arrested so physically that two other attendees upstairs attempted to intervene in officers pulling on my shoulders after I told them I have a torn rotator cuff tendon and multiple cartilage tears in both of my shoulders. That is what happened in the audio you just played. That is why I cannot lift my arms normally. Two women in the gallery, and thank you to the woman in the white shirt with the red writing, who said, "I need you to take your hands off of her and just let her walk with her cane." They did not do that, and only when their own sergeant intervened in a back stairwell of that building to say, "Stop, we need to get her medical care and a wheelchair," did they stop tugging on me. While again, I was saying disabled, Amy, would you like to know why I was told that I was removed and arrested? The sergeant of arms told me it was because I was standing up silently. No buttons, no facial expressions, no gestures, no signs, not one sound. Standing up. There are only two things you can do at the State of the Union, and they are sit down and stand up. All kinds of people were standing up all night, me too. I stood up at the moment that I heard this man say some of the most racist things I have heard come out of any leader's mouth about the people of my city and continue to trash talk my state of Minnesota and glorify DHS, the people who did this to me and who are being allowed to roam free on the streets.
If you could very quickly, I'm so sorry this happened to you, but explain why you have a torn rotator cuff, why you have tendons ripped in both shoulders.
I have a tendon ripped in one shoulder, and then in that same shoulder, another cartilage rip, and in my left shoulder, two cartilage tears with what my doctor called ragged pieces of tissue hanging in the joint that may need to be operated on. That happened because in the audio you played, I was talking about when I was pulled out of my car. Most people see the first part of that video. I was put on the ground behind my car, cuffed behind my back, and then carried through the street. Face down, I was lifted up by my wrists and ankles with my hands already cuffed behind my back. And then once I was in the Whipple Center, instead of getting me a walking aid because I'm disabled, they just jerked me around by my shoulders for a while. So that's what I'm dealing with. That's what I came here with. And I really wonder if these folks have noticed yet that every time you try to break my body, you fuel my spirit. I was arrested for standing up. This administration wins zero prizes for their command of metaphors, my friend. The reason I stood up at that moment was not to disrupt anything. I was silent. Arms by my side. I stood up because hearing this level of racism, I wanted to see with my own eyes, unmediated by anyone's lens, who had still come to this building to govern, if there were any grown-ups down there. Who really believes this lie that was used to brutalize our city, my body? And if unchecked, this is the lie that will be used to brutalize communities of color, all sorts of communities, as people in this country, as black folks, indigenous folks, as this has happened for centuries, based on lies. And you know what? I can't think of ever a time that someone has been very physically arrested or arrested at all or even removed for silently standing up at the State of the Union. That is what you do. The only reason I can think that they thought me standing silently there was a protest is because by this point, my body, unafraid, even if broken, standing and looking at these people in their face, well, that must be a protest to you.
You know, I wonder if there's a charge standing without applauding, because certainly Republicans stood up dozens of times throughout President Trump's State of the Union and applauded. But
yes,
you
Amy,
stood
and
silently.
Actually, and yes, and actually the moment that they physically started removing me by my shoulders, all kinds of Republicans were standing up. I know they were Republicans because who was seated next to me? The sheriff of Coffee County, Alabama, and the mayor of one of the mayors from Nevada. They were standing up. None of them were arrested. I was much quieter than them.
Well, Ali Rahman, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Arrested at the State of the Union last night, just got out a few hours before this broadcast, came right to the studio. Ali was a guest of Representative Ilhan Omar. Last month, federal immigration agents in Minneapolis violently dragged her out of her car as she told them she was disabled. Video of the incident went viral. We'll also link to our previous conversation with her after that attack. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. We spend the last part of this show with Congressmember Adelita Grijalva, was among several Democratic lawmakers who boycotted Trump's State of the Union last night. She joins us now from Washington, D.C. Her district includes Tucson, Arizona, near the southern border with Mexico. Congressmember Grijalva, thanks for coming back on. As we heard that violent description of what happened to Alia, I thought about you being pepper sprayed, intervening in an ICE attack in your district. You have talk about why you didn't attend last night, the State of the Union.
I couldn't in good conscience sit there and listen to Trump go on and on with what we knew was going to be hours of lies, gaslighting, and maligning the very people that I represent. He talked about, and that's literally exactly what he did. He broke his own record for just continuing to just spew during the State of the Union. There was no attempt to try to bring this country together. He literally pointed at Democrats and called them out. And so I'm grateful that I wasn't there. I did watch it because I think it's important for me to understand what is it that he's saying so we can push back on it. But I mean, at one point, he was handing out a lot of medals, right? And I literally said out loud, I am waiting for him to give himself a medal. And in the next breath, he said, oh, I think I should get one of those medals. You know, he continued to talk about, and I feel like we're dismissing some of the jokes, right? About, you know, it should be his third term, that kind of thing. I feel we need to be very afraid of, we know what he has done when he caused a violent outburst, something that has changed our country forever, because he thought that he won the election. It doesn't matter that that we all know that that's not true, because there are a percentage of people in this country that believe every lie that he spews. It doesn't matter how much evidence is backing it up. And his campaign of cruelty has devastating consequences. Just like you heard the stories in Minneapolis, we have those same stories all over the nation and including in our district.
I'm sorry to say we only have a minute to go, but I wanted to ask about you giving your seat up to Mubashir Khalif Hassan, a Minnesotan of Somali descent who was a second guest of Congressmember Ilhan Omar of Minneapolis. If in these last seconds you can tell us why you gave it to him, another man, a U.S. citizen who was attacked by ICE.
Because I thought it was really important when Trump was going to spew lies about what the state of our union, that he has to look at into the eyes of the people that he's harming directly. And I had the opportunity to hear his story when I went to Minneapolis and I just offered my seat to Ilhan because I knew she had a lot of people directly impacted that she could bring with her. Mm-hmm.
In the last 20 seconds, the expansion of these ICE detention centers that you have been fighting all over the country?
Yep. I mean, they want to pop up everywhere. It's just literal warehouses of human suffering. And I'm afraid for this country. I'm afraid for the constituents in my community because he is locking up citizens. And the process to get them out is costly, expensive, and it's tearing our communities apart.
Congresswoman Adelita Grijalva, I want to thank you so much for being with us, the first Latina to represent Arizona in Congress. That does it for our show, Democracy Now!, produced with Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Nicole Salazar, Sarah Nasser, Trina Nadura. I'm Amy Goodman. This is another edition of Democracy Now!
You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
If you're a regular listener of this show or other shows on CJSF, we'd love to hear from you. Tell us about what you like and why you like it, as well as ways we can improve our programming. To leave comments, please email cjsfprog@sfu.ca or call 778-782-4423. This information can also be found on our website at www.cjsf.ca.